the important thing to recognize that this coaching is happening in the context of the person's team within their organization.
You are listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, our show helping you build positive team culture. Our consulting firm has spent 25 years investing in teams so that people are mentally engaged and emotionally healthy. Hello, everyone. My name is Nathan Freeberg, and today on the podcast, I have the privilege and tremendous opportunity to talk again with Brian and Linda Schubring here at their lovely home in Minneapolis. I was here for a couple days at the very beginning of August. We had an event that was absolutely amazing. We invited about 25 people to come and experience part of what we do with teams around collaboration. And then we had a live podcast with an amazing guest who had an amazing career collaborating with all kinds of different people. And in part of this time in Minneapolis, Brian and Linda were just talking a lot about different coaching clients that they have been working with throughout the past year and some of the amazing insights that they have not only given these clients, many of them are executives in high-level positions all over the country, but the things that they have learned personally and been challenged with and been able to take some of these ideas and principles and best practices and tips and tricks and all of the words and shared them with other people and in some cases integrated into more of the work that we do. And so as we were sitting in their living room in Minneapolis, I was like, can we just talk candidly without an outline? And I would just love to learn from you what you have learned. And so what you're about to hear is that conversation. And I hope you find value from it, whether you are yourself an executive at a Fortune 100 company or a 25-year-old in your first role out of college looking to kind of figure out what your career looks like. But I hope that these valuable insights will be something that you can implement in your leadership journey today. Enjoy. Linda, I think, has one locked and loaded.
And maybe before I share some of the things that, that we have learned, I want to start with why we didn't put up a coaching shingle from the get-go.
Oh.
Well, this should be good. Go on.
Because we didn't necessarily want to be known for coaching. We wanted to be known for helping grow leaders, helping teams get more healthy or interact in a more positive way or be more breakthrough as an organization or encourage organizations to be more passionate about their best resource, and that's their people. And so as we were using strengths to get into organizations and using strengths to understand people in a different way, we kept saying, let's focus this in the context of teams. Let's do this in the context of teams. And then what started to happen, it was about 10 years ago now, what started to happen is that there were these one-offs where we were working with a team and all of a sudden there was a leader who would raise their hand or someone would point to them like, you need help. Or the leader would self-select like, I need help. I need some partnership in how to lead this group better. I think I have some things that I need to work on or want to work on. And we were, once again, as we are accidental business owners, we're also accidental coaches. Because what we started to note, and I think a little bit of this came from when I was the vice president of employee experience and culture internally at an organization where people would come to my office and maybe they had one question, but they really just needed an hour of a recalibration or an hour of inspiration or even 10 minutes to reframe. And as I transitioned from that company to working together with Brian, we started more intently, we started to realize is that we have to wring out this sage advice that we have gathered, lessons learned, wisdom, and the best way we could do it is with these one-to-one interactions with people. Thus, coaching became more front and center. So a lot of times the coaching that we do is as a result of working with a team. So we're investing in the team, we're getting them to talk better with one another, and then we're having these one-to-one coaching sessions that follow up perhaps with some of the curriculum that we were working on and drive a greater path towards health, a greater path towards being a better contributor to a team or to an organization. And when we started seeing people just say, you know, 10 minutes with you can change my life, we started to realize that this is something that we want to do and be a part of.
So for those of you listening and you're in your own coaching practice, or you're wondering, like, really, what is the context of what they're talking about? This is the context. We are currently coaching 26 individuals. And in a month, we'll be adding 6 more individuals. And a month after that, we'll be adding 6 more individuals. So the scale of what we're doing, you know, is around 40 people now that we're going to be coaching in the next couple of months. The important thing to recognize that this coaching is happening in the context of the person's team within their organization. So we are not coaching any one person outside of our deep knowing of the organizational culture and some type of engagement with the teams. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because when we begin to talk about the themes that are emerging from our coaching, these are coaching conversations that are happening in a specific context. And so the through line, the themes that are running through our coaching, I think need to be understood in their context, that we have knowledge of the organization. And in having knowledge of the organization, knowledge of the teams, and knowledge of the leadership, we then also have an awareness of what are some of the indicators or reasons why these themes are emerging and why these themes consistently emerge. Because we have found that a fault line or a theme within someone's life is often continuously reinforced by two things: their present context and how they were raised, the environment and the family within which they were raised. And so as you're listening to this conversation, think to yourself of what are some of the themes that you're seeing in your coaching, and then ask yourself, how does the organization or the team environment contribute to the behaviors and attributes of the one you're coaching, and what does their history, context, family of origin, how is that also contributing? So with that caveat, with that framework, I think we can now begin to discuss what are some of these thematic through lines that weave themselves or continue to be part of our conversation in very important ways.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. That's a great summary and synopsis and setup and all the things.
Yes.
Linda, what's your first teamwork. What's your first insight? And again, we're not like going super in depth with these, but just like, what's something that's really stuck out to you that you think is relevant to share?
There's a couple things that I want to start with, and it has to do with helping people feel safe and helping people actually want to trust us enough to go on this journey and trust themselves enough to go on this journey. Because we really begin where the person is. We want to know where they're coming from, start to hear their voice, start to understand their cadence. We know that one session isn't going to, you know, fix everything. But if we can start with this beginning point of understanding where someone is coming from, or how they listen or how they process, and be leisurely in some ways with someone from the get-go, then we can inspire change, or then we can catalyze growth in another way. And so what I have learned is, in all the coaching clients that I've worked with, is I'm willing to have a plan, yet be very open-handed, so that trust is built from the get-go.
How long does it take to build that trust? And do you? I know it's not like a 1 week. And you're also very good at building trust quickly with people, Linda. But of all these people, is that because you have a existing relationship in the context of the team?
Yeah.
Like, can you get deep pretty quick, or does it take a few sessions to feel like, oh, okay, this person trusts me, I can ask them more deeply about what their purpose is?
I'm willing to go first, and that means I'm willing to share a bit of my story, or I don't make the session about me, but when I can be relatable, that engenders trust. So when is trust built? I think it is ongoing. Because we all know that trust can be broken in an instant or an offhanded remark or some kind of response. And so I think trust in a coaching relationship is, or any relationship, is absolutely ongoing, and it's never a point of arrival. It's always cultivating it.
And what I hear you saying is that for any leader, you have to, like, trust comes with being vulnerable, with being willing to go first, as you said, and to make sure that that is a part of any relationship at any level of the leadership tree. That's good. Brian, what about you? Do you have any through lines or things that you have learned that our listeners can benefit from hearing? He's got a look on his face that says, I have I don't know where to start.
Well, I got stuck on the your question about trust, because I immediately went, I don't know where this came from, but I immediately went to Better Call Saul in the episode where he was lost in a desert and he's like drinking his own urine.
That's
like
great.
He's just so thirsty, yeah. You know, just like you drink anything. That's where my mind went. Cause I think that there are just some people that they're in environments where there's just so much distrust that they're just craving it. I'm thinking specifically of one individual. Our first conversation was him asking for help, like right away, but just, he laid it all out there. And I was quite surprised. And then there are other people that it takes a long time to build that. But and I know that for everybody, that's a little bit different. One of the big things, like when we were first brainstorming on this topic, one of the probably the main theme that is part of one of our coaching conversation sessions that continues to have play is this session called Appreciation. And this session emerged from a need for individuals to really focus on what is good and right about them, to practice positivity bias towards themselves. We live in environments and we live in cultures where there's such a negative narrative. And the brain doesn't do well with negative narratives. In fact, the brain spends exponentially more amount of time dealing with the negative narratives and trying to correct that than the brain actually spends time creating positive stories about ourselves.
Sadly, that's very true.
So with that being said, when you're in a workplace and you have the privilege to coach someone, I believe one of the most important places to start is begin to kind of like drip introduce this positive bias toward yourself idea. And we approach that by talking about self-appreciation. But we don't even use the word self. We just talk about appreciation. And one of the reasons why is if we can help people begin to look at themselves in a positive mindset, it opens them up for a greater degree of trust and listening. And we ask them things like, you know, what do you appreciate and honor and like about yourself? We oftentimes find people that are willing to acknowledge the positive things in others before they'll do it in themselves. So we kind of start there. Then the second thing we talk to them about is, what are the people or the causes or the experiences that have nurtured you along the way that have reinforced this appreciation about yourself? And I can't tell you how many times people are stumped, just stumped, in how to really answer that question. Oftentimes I hear a person's first response, something like, well, I haven't thought about that, or I'm not sure if I can answer that question because they're so focused on the negativity. So we know that that happens. So one of the first things that we ask people is, what are 3 to 5 qualities that you appreciate about yourself? And you'll often hear someone start negative. You know, we asked about positive. Like, but the idea here is this reminder of self-appreciation. What is good and beautiful about yourself, what you appreciate about yourself, that theme often needs to be revisited throughout 6 to 12 months, because people begin to drift and they begin to practice that negativity bias towards themselves. And we have to remind people over and over again to, you know, lean back, remember what is good and right about you before you really lean in to talk about the challenge. I believe that everyone has the capacity to name those qualities that they like about themselves. You may not be one that practices saying that out loud all the time, but when people actually rest in this practice and through this conversation, as it continues to unfold, you see people really begin to open up and share what they're proud about themselves. And that, to me, is really the whole purpose of this, is to give people the practice and the permission to accept themselves as they truly are. the things that do need improvement, because we all have that, but also those things that you naturally do well consistently over time that give life to yourself and to others.
It's fascinating you're talking about this, because I think of, you know, people at this high level as like being beyond all that, but they're clearly not. When you talk about appreciation, that's different than gratitude, and kind of how, you know, making gratitude lists at the end of the day has become a very, it's a great idea, but just like a really popular Instagram-y type of a thing. That's like, I'm grateful for, you know, I went for a run, I'm grateful for a dinner. But what you're talking about is more specific to, what do I appreciate about myself? What did I do well? Because that's our mind defaults to, well, I screwed that up, that didn't go as I planned. And so you're talking about something different than just making a list of gratitudes, right?
Correct. The practice of expressing gratitude, I believe, is beneficial to people. We have found, and research has supported this, saying that people often find it easy to express gratitude and to show appreciation to others first without the reciprocal expression of gratitude towards themselves.
So I think the takeaway here, everyone listening, push pause or wait till you're done. Maybe if not, if you're driving, what's something you appreciate about yourself? What did you do really well today? And, you know, maybe don't just stop at one, and maybe try to integrate that into every part of your day. That's a good one, Brian. And I'm going to leave a link in the show notes, because about a year ago, you led me through and I let you record it.
Oh, that's right.
We actually did a session.
It was really good.
Appreciation practice.
Someone actually asked me to do that with you again. I'm not sure if that was a indication I wanted to hear the practice or have you hear you go
Seriously?
Through it from the beginning.
Oh, was it my mom? Because she listens to the podcast.
Yeah. My mom does too. Hi, mom.
Linda, do you have another big picture theme that you want to share that we can glean some wisdom from?
Well, sometimes our clients will ask us, or even potential clients will ask us, how do you see growth? What's my return on investment? If I'm going to invest in coaching, what will I get at the end?
Sure.
Will I be a more self-actualized person? Will I be less angry?
Something.
And those that we've coached, their colleagues, their peers, their teams have reported that there has been a change. They can't always name it. Sometimes they bump into it. And as I'm observing the people that we have met with, I'm detecting a greater degree of mindfulness, a greater degree of awareness, relationality from the leaders that we work with. It doesn't happen necessarily overnight. I think it's incremental steps kind of pulled together through time. So it's this mindful piece that captures my attention. So in preparation, we were on a flight recently, on a Delta flight. I was listening to the masterclass of John Kabat-Zinn on John Kabat-Zinn on mindfulness.
We'll fact check it later.
And I was captured by it for a couple of reasons, because I think it mapped to our work, is that we are mindful. We help our clients be more mindful and mindful of the unfolding that's happening in their life, in their person, throughout a conversation. So some people will even wonder, like, how did this hour just pass away? Like, it's gone. Were we just talking this long? Did I miss something? People aren't checking their phone. They're not checking the time. The clients that we're working with, they're really trying to partner to be a better human. And in this mindfulness practice, John Kabat-Zinn said, mindfulness, so maybe think of awareness or even relationality, it's a way of being in wise relationship with life unfolding in the only way it ever does. And I thought that is in part what we are doing. So it's not just a return on investment, but if we can help leaders become more mindful, if we can be on the journey with them to create a different kind of awareness, self-awareness, others' awareness, then I think people contribute to society in a much more healthy, positive, and even loving way. And that's what I've noticed and detected is a greater mindfulness in our clients.
And is that something that you're leading them through specific mindfulness practices or integrating that in a way? Because I'll leave this in the show notes. So much great research on like the practice of meditation, the practice of, mindfulness things. How is that piece of it integrated, if at all?
We'll be right back.
At Leadership Vision Consulting, we have spent 23 years helping individuals explore the depth and dimension of their personal strengths and have helped hundreds of teams build positive culture. We're excited to now announce our new online membership platform that brings together the resources, community, and motivation that you need to grow your influence and build a positive team culture. Through our courses, workshops, live Q&A sessions, and more, you'll gain the skills and confidence you need to lead effectively. And with our supportive community of like-valued leaders, you'll never feel like you're doing it alone. Visit leadershipvisionconsulting.com/community to learn more.
We kind of surprise them with that. I mean, it's not like, I need you to cross your legs and put your
foot.
Take a breath. But it depends. It depends on the client. I've witnessed Brian. There's times even when Brian and I will coach someone together. And as I'm watching Brian, I can even see him pairing his breath with the client. I can see him agitating in a certain way and then teeing it up for me to do something else. So there's something very adaptive and agile about our approach, but it isn't necessarily, and now we're doing this. Okay. And next we're doing that. Brian?
That's interesting you bring that up, because there is an individual that I've been coaching for a couple of years. And in that relationship, there have been many, many instances where I will practice very small nuggets of mindfulness with this individual. Now we're coaching someone that's connected to this individual. And this second guy said, "Now I've heard you do this." And I haven't been coaching him for very long. I said, "Yeah, I do that." And so this new coaching client, he said right to me, "Well, next time I need you to do a 10-minute practice with me because I need to calm the F down." And so he just said, "That'll be the best thing for me because I really can't focus. And if you're helping this other individual start that way, I want that same thing." And so here's someone that I'm pretty confident doesn't do a consistent, much less daily mindful practice at all, but recognizes that there's a need for something like that. And I really, really believe in the power of taking that time in the first part of a coaching session to help that person enter into the moment and the place that they're sitting, and to watch their body respond to how it is that they're getting lighter as they're sitting there. That process, whether I'm in person or on video, I feel that I have to do that just to respect what they may be carrying, because I just don't know what they're shouldering as they walk into the session. And as open as I can be, I feel that I need to recognize where they may be at, what they might be feeling, and to give them a chance to share that. And that may take 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes.
I didn't know you were doing that at the beginning of those. That's cool. So I grew up thinking meditation, until just recently, was, woo-woo, hocus-pocus, like not whatever. And then I read a book, I can't remember the name about it, but it cited a study that I looked at about how Navy SEALs are trained in mindfulness and meditation. Because not only does it help with just like calming down, but like it helps them be more present in these probably the most demanding, high stress jobs when you have to make decisions, and allows them to have more presence and being mindful of what's going on around them. I mean, maybe that's just a great takeaway, Linda, of like, go figure out whatever that means for you. There's lots of very popular, accessible books about it. There's also some very, Eastern books that are a little thicker that I've read.
Yeah, well, and I would encourage people to check out Peak Mind.
Yes, that's
or
the book.
Read, Dr. Yeah. Amishi Jha, because of her study on attention, mm-hmm. and what it does with the brain. So we know that we are coaching not in an information age. We are coaching in an age of attention. When the world and everything is a distraction, we want to capture someone's attention and allow them to learn to pay attention.
That's great. Brian, do you have one final insight or thought you want to leave us with?
The final insight that I have is for the consideration of perception. One of the things that we have found is people are often surprised at how much influence they have over their perception. Oftentimes we talk with people and they are so frustrated with how they're being perceived and how they're being misunderstood, how other people's emotions are influencing and impacting them. And perception is so often perceived or understood as the other person's problem. Like, they aren't understanding me. And so one of the themes that we talk to people about and have conversations with is on this idea of perception. And I just can't say enough about Heidi Grant Halvorsen's book, because we cite her research a lot, and it's critical in our work here, because her book title is No One Understands You. And just that statement, and that's the first part of it. No one understands you. That isn't a question. That's a statement. And then she follows up with, and what to do about it, or what you can do about it. And one of the things that we remind people of is what Heidi Grant says in her book. And it's a quote that we read to everyone when we have these conversations about perception, to convey that you have more control over this than you think, but it takes a while. And Heidi Grant says this: bombard perceivers with plentiful, overwhelming evidence that the impression of you is wrong. This evidence has to be unexpected, attention-getting, and inconsistent with existing impressions and bias.
So good.
And that overwhelming evidence to the contrary is kind of how she summarizes it somewhere else. That's 4 to 6 months of ongoing practice, which people, you know, want that instant fix. But the idea is this: when we engage perception, we're also engaging our awareness of our influence on other people. And that, to me, is such a profound need that I believe each person has, is to understand both positively and in that other way that my influence is affecting other people. I have control over that, and I can help shape how I'm being perceived. And in the process of doing that, it's requiring you, as the one who's being misperceived, to truly consider in an empathetic way how others may be understanding you. It almost automatically puts you in the place of the listener and the perceiver. And that, to me, is such a unique connection. Because when we have these conversations, I'll say, well, who's misperceiving you? They'll name the person. I'll say, well, what do you think they're thinking? What do you think that they're feeling? And then they actually have to then take that perspective, which opens themselves up like, well, maybe I am. Maybe my behavior is actually contributing to that. And again, it connects back to self-awareness and self-acceptance.
What's interesting about that, in the context of what you shared at the beginning about you're doing this coaching in a team, is that it's one thing to coach someone just all by themselves. You have no idea how they're being perceived. And so when you have that, those other data points, and the leader saying, well, I think I'm, you know, really a joyful person and I'm a great listener, and you got their 8 direct reports being like,
nope,
this person is not that. It's probably hard, but really, really powerful. So,
but that's a critical part of it, is because a person will complain, well, they always be about me. And like, there's this, these always statements and every time statement. And I'll ask them, well, how often does that happen? It's like every time we meet. So they have an abundance of data to back up their side of it. So how do you then counterbalance that with evidence to the contrary, as Heidi Grant is saying?
And I want to add this, because introverts don't give us enough data points. Maybe data points in body language more than the actual words that they're using. And so oftentimes when we have more introverted clients, they'll be like, well, I'm not trying to be that way. And they have to reckon with or reconcile that they are being misperceived. So
how easy might not be the right word, but how often, maybe? Have you seen someone go from leader, executive leader, these coaching clients go from completely out of touch with how people are perceiving them to being really well aligned with that and, you know, make a lot of growth? And is that something that is a long, painful process? Is that something that's like, yeah, if you invest the time and you're open to it, anyone can be, can align your perception with reality?
That's a great question, because we most often are coaching individuals for 6 to 12 months. And the research, especially Heidi Grant's research, the research supports that this ongoing demonstration of evidence to the contrary of the perception, it takes 4 to 6 months of practice for people's minds to begin to shift, or for that imbalance of evidence to be in your favor. We often aren't around when that happens. However, it is so consistently true that human beings can easily detect changes in mood, or changes in attitude, or changes in motivation, and say that out loud that will indicate that change is happening. And that's what we often see. It's like, oh, I didn't know you thought that, or I didn't know that about you, or, you know. And what they're doing with statements like that is team members are saying, oh, I see a data point. Oh, I see evidence to the contrary. And just that beginning to name that process is the validation of the incremental growth that's leading towards a specific outcome. But truth be told, we often aren't there when the outcome is potentially achieved.
And then we tell the leader if we're, you know, catch people doing it right. So some people say like, well, then I don't want to always come down on this person. And we take a completely opposite approach. Catch them doing it right. Fuel that sense of belonging. Fuel that sense of meaning. Fuel that sense of it's worth it to leave some old habits behind. It's worth it to develop some new ones and become a more whole person.
Well, Brian and Linda, thank you for sharing some of these insights. I think there's some good takeaways, and, you know, there's a few things that I knew, but it's good to be reminded of that and be like, okay, we should focus on that more. And thank you for listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, sharing our expertise in the discovery, practice, and implementation of a strengths-based approach to people, teams, and culture. For more resources about developing your strengths, the strengths of your team, or the strengths of your entire organization, click the link in the show notes or visit us on the web at leadershipvisionconsulting.com. And if you found value from this episode or any of our other online resources, we would love it if you could leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Or perhaps more importantly, we would love it if you could just share these resources with someone you think might benefit from growing deeper in their strengths, in their leadership, or in creating a healthier team culture. I'm Nathan Freeberg.
I'm Linda Shubring.
And I am Brian Shubring.
And on behalf of our entire team,
thanks for listening.
Right on. And stop. See.